Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 611 for comics originally released on April 24th, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Batgirl number 34. Now, have you been reading the title the whole time?
Not the whole time, but since we reviewed an issue, I guess it was a little over a dozen issues ago, we reviewed one and I picked it up since then because I liked it.
Okay, it's generally a good title. I would agree with that. The threat this time around is the terrible trio.
Yeah.
The fox, the vulture, and the shark, and you could recognize them because they wear masks of a fox, a vulture, and a shark. And that's the extent of their super villainous other than being kind of organized crime bosses, or would be organized crime bosses.
Exactly, yeah.
I've never really considered them to be major threats of any sort in terms of the whole Batman family, you know, villainous groups and whatnot. But they were used well here.
Well, I'm glad you told me they were wearing masks because I just assumed they were anthropomorphic characters. I'm like, all right, like King Shark or something walking around.
Let me rephrase. In past continuities, they've been wearing masks. I honestly don't know if they've established that here. I'm pretty sure that they're wearing masks because I took, like on that first page when we've got the close-up of the shark, I took the black in there to be like a black veil hiding his face.
Yeah, and it's probably the case. Yeah, it could be. I just didn't know. I didn't know the characters. Never seen them before.
You know, it's one of those things, that's where being a comic almost works to its detriment, because I think if this were like a TV show, it would be clear if they were wearing kind of stationary masks.
Yeah, you can see where I would look at it, and I'm just thinking, okay, where are these weird anthropomorphic characters coming from? All right, I just roll with it.
It just seems like the shark always has his mouth open in the same thing, but almost every time we see him, he's talking, so...
That's true. And actually, on the second page, from the side, you can see it's actually a mask, now that you say it. The second, from the side view, you can actually see, that is the mesh. Okay, I was not very thorough in my view.
No, I think it's actually surprisingly confusing, now that I think about it.
Yeah, so... Anyways, so characters wearing masks. Organized crime, my first experience with the team.
The funny thing is with the masks, I'm really not sure how the fox or the vulture see.
Yeah, unless like I was looking at, maybe the vulture sees out the snout holes, I guess, but the fox, it's like it looks like I have no clue how they're seeing through their mask.
I mean,
because that's pretty thorough. Yeah.
The art looks great, but there's a certain matter of how would this work in reality that does come up.
Exactly.
This may be why these characters have never shown up on a live-action kind of Batman family show.
It could be.
But they're doing Batwoman, so they have the chance.
Yes, they do.
I thought generally the story was fairly accessible, and a fair amount actually happened in this issue. I was kind of pleased with that.
Yeah, I always, when we reviewed Batgirl before, I found it super accessible. Like, every time you pick it up, it's usually like a one or two issue arc. With this writer, Marguerite Scott, is her name?
Sure, we'll go with that.
Okay. And she writes where it's engaging. She gives you a little bit of story. And it's either a done-in-one or a done-in-two, which makes it very easy to jump onto the title like I did, probably like at issue 18 or 20 or something like that, and just roll with it. I didn't feel like I needed to go back and read all the previous stuff for it to make sense.
It's ironic you say it's normally a done-in-one and or done in two, because with the terrible trio, this is actually a three-part story. It actually says terrible part one of three, so it's just funny. I don't know if the fact there are three villains had anything to do with that or not.
Okay, I really liked how she kind of went with the going into the detectiving going on in there. She kind of focused on how she tracked down where to be based on her detective skills, which you sometimes miss in the Bat books. They'll have a little bit of detective stuff, and this one was kind of more in depth, and I liked it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There was a fair amount of her actually thinking through things and doing the detective work. I would say she may be over focused on that. I thought it was a little heavy handed when she kept ignoring Alyssa's calls and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, that can't end well.
Exactly. and get some Bluetooth while you're on that motorcycle. Don't be holding that phone to your head.
Yeah, I did think that was ridiculous. Because also, she had it in the pocket such that if she hit a bump in the road, and I've got to assume Gotham's going to have some potholes. It just seems like that kind of city. That the phone would just bounce out.
Yeah, it's completely, it's not even shut, the little flap holding the phone. So yeah, that was kind of funny. I was like, how do you hear it? And then she's like, I can hear the motorcycle in the background. Are you riding on your bike? I'm like, yeah. And how does she hear anything on a motorcycle driving with the wind, everything like that? Whatever.
Yeah. Well, and this is one of those things that back when she had the full kind of cowl and stuff, I could excuse not wearing a helmet because, well, maybe it's protected already. But with the mask and the free-flowing hair and stuff, I don't know. I'm just one of those people that that think if you're going to ride a motorcycle, you should wear a helmet.
I am too. I'm like, yeah, very dangerous.
I'll also admit that when they sell you a motorcycle, they give you the motorcycle license, they ought to have a very free, or not free, but a very cost-effective, affordable, and effective helmet to give you for a nominal cost. But it just seemed reckless for her to be driving that way.
Yeah. And the detectiving that happens in here all revolves around a scene that's like from the movie Seven, with the seven deadly sins. What's in the box? And you probably never watched that movie. It's kind of gory.
Nope.
But okay.
But that was the one part of the scene I didn't care for.
Okay, I figure you wouldn't like that, but when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's like the movie Seven. Kind of gross.
Yeah, I did think it was kind of gross. The other thing that got a little heavy-handed here was the friction between Barbara Gordon and Commissioner Gordon.
Yeah, that was really heavy-handed.
And also, some of what's going on with Jason Bard, I just don't know where they're going with that character.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know where they're going with it either, but I would agree with you on that.
How familiar are you with the character?
Not very. I've only seen him a couple times.
Have you read Batman Eternal?
No, I did not read Batman Eternal, and that's probably why I don't know him very well.
That's where this version of that character was kind of introduced.
Okay, gotcha. So I just don't have much of a understanding of him and what he's about.
Yeah, and that's fine. You shouldn't need that coming in. And I think they wrote the story such if you don't have that background, you're okay. The only time it felt a little weird was when he'd been in the scene. We cut to a little bit later, Commissioner Gordon is there, and suddenly Jason's nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
Which, if you know the history of the characters, makes sense, but I would have liked to have had that, you know, explicitly addressed in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, it probably would have meant something to me at that point.
I do recommend reading Batman Eternal. That was one of the weekly books they did for the Batman family at one point. It was good stuff.
Well, good news on that front. I actually picked up the Batman Eternal omnibus. It is in my stack of stuff to be read.
I kind of figured you had a copy of it.
Yeah, I'm a sick man when it comes to the omnibuy.
It's good to have it to where when I recommend you read it, it's there to be read.
Exactly. I just got to make time to read it. It's like, oh my gosh, I got so much stuff.
Yeah, it's. I think that's the curse of our time, of there's too much to consume.
Yeah, kind of like I have the money to buy the stuff. I do not have the time to consume the stuff. So I guess we just need to retire.
That's my goal. I just, it hadn't worked out yet. I don't want to give away the ending, but I will say that this ended on a definite, you know, cliffhanger reveal.
Yes. Yes, it did.
And it was one of those that, as with many, we'll say supervillains, not that I think these are technically supervillains, but it was gratuitously showy.
Yeah, it was showy. I wouldn't consider them supervillains. I would consider them organized criminals and trying to extort their ilk, people of their ilk.
This end scene almost seemed like something you would see out of a movie, and there's a particular movie I'm thinking of where I felt this would have been more in place.
Okay.
But it was one of those, like, yeah, it's the thing is, it's a tried and true aspect of the comic book superhero genre, so I can't really knock it too much for that. But I did stop, and it's like, well, wait a sec, they just happen to have what lying around? Or did they plan for this?
It's true. So I am interested to see where this is going. This is going to be one of her bigger arcs because, like we talked about, usually one or two issues and she's done. But this was really entertaining. It was fun. It's not the best Batgirl issue I've read, but at the same time, I felt like it gave me more meat than some of the other issues I've read.
I would agree with that. I would say it was a little bit better than most. Not tons better, but it's usually a solid title, and I think they did a really good showing this time. Again, I was pleased with just how much story we got in this issue.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So for me, I'm going to go with a B plus on this. I thought it was a fun read, a solid story. The art was good. And again, I thought we got more story than we get in most comics these days.
Yeah. And, I'm really close to you. You liked it just slightly more than me. I give it a B. I thought it's a good read. This is one of, the titles DC that I always enjoy when I read it. And I like that it's so accessible, but I don't feel like I have to remember what happened in the previous issue to read this issue, no matter which issue it is.
Yeah, and I think that's something that more writers need to be doing, because if they're expecting you to have, like, memorized the previous issue by the time the new one comes out, it's like, come on.
Yeah, like you already know, and I know, that end scene will be the first page on the next issue, and there'll be some type of, you know, recap of the way the people, not really a recap, but they'll kind of discuss some stuff.
They'll reset the
scene.
You'll
just run with it. Yeah, exactly, and you'll just be able to flow right with it, even if you didn't read this.
Yeah, I've had a couple of issues where it takes me a good couple of pages to get back into the story of, oh yeah, that's where they left off. It's like that, the particularly on a cliffhanger, the splash you end with almost ought to be the splash you start with on the next issue.
Yeah, I think it should be mandatory. You end like that, bring it back.
Or at the very least, could double as the cover of the next issue, something of that sort.
That would be cool. Yeah, so maybe preview spoiler, so...
Yeah, true. There is that aspect. It's how do you do that without spoiling the story, you know, months in advance?
They could be like a Marvel and write secret to be determined.
Classified. Oh, maybe
exactly. Don't, classified. That's what it is.
Maybe don't end on a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So, all right. Moving on to our Marvel book. It's Ironheart number 5. Yes. This is one that we reviewed the first issue of. I liked it a lot, so I decided to actually get on board this title. I had not originally decided to do that. This is another one where I think a decent amount happens in this issue, but not all of it was really kind of major stuff. And I felt myself wondering, why are they spending so much time on some of this?
I would agree with you there, because I read these two issues back to back. And right when I read it, my first thought was, I like the first one. I like the Batgirl more than this one. There's a lot of stuff that happened in here. Once again, like, you flesh out the detectiving part over in that issue, and here they fleshed out Iron Man or Iron Suit, Ironheart costume powers. You know, there's a lot of stuff that they're showing that the suit can do and her powers and stuff. But at the same time, this story was not as engaging as the other one.
Well, it's funny because I got to the end of it thinking, okay, I read it and I read a lot, but I didn't feel like much of importance happened. That I actually went through and kind of broke the story down as to what are they spending the pages on.
Okay, yeah, because I think for me, some of it seemed a little bit nonsensical, but I want you to tell me what you thought when
okay.
You broke it down.
The first page was just sort of setting the scene, the mood of sorts for the story, but didn't really advance the story.
Yep.
So it's not that it was wasted, it did what it set out to do. It's just, I don't know, it felt like an opening voiceover of a TV show, but not the meat of the episode.
Yep.
We then have two pages with Xavier that kind of resets the storyline of sorts for new readers, but nothing really important happened with Xavier. I think we see him in a panel later, so I'm like, who is he? Why does he matter? And other than giving us some exposition.
Yep.
We then had about three pages of Ironheart kind of following what's her name?
I can't remember her name.
Deja
right now.
Or whatever?
Yeah, I think it was Deja. Deja, something like that.
And there was a fair amount of just, you know, it'd be like the cops trailing the suspect or whatever. It went on just a little too long.
Correct. And that's where she threw in some suit powers and stuff.
Yeah. But then we get about eight pages of what I'm going to put as action and kind of air quotes, if you will, with Birch, with Midnight Fire, a little bit more of the meat and potatoes of the episode.
Exactly. What's going on?
You know, and it was... Frankly, a lot of writers, this would have been almost the entire issue, and that's it.
Yes.
So I appreciate getting more than that, but there was an aspect where it's like, okay, that's eight pages out of the whole thing. We then get a page and a half of, because it was this sweatshop, basically, that she was finding.
Yes.
A page and a half of the kids she found there getting them home.
Yeah, that was kind of like, okay, this is just dragging on.
Yeah. And then a page and a half of Riri with her mom.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, we get a little character building, whatever. But again, it felt a little too much. We then have two pages at Riri at her new lab, which I'm like, damn, she got this set up fast.
Really quick.
It's like she was just talking about she needed one, and then boom, it's a few days later, or later that day, after a few days later with her mom or whatever, and it's done. It's like, okay. I'm not going to say we got payoff for the kids, but we at least got more of them in this scene.
Yes.
And then we got a page there at the end, which ties into the origin of the character. She's actually at a gun violence support group because her origin ties into gun violence. I thought that was good, but it felt like, where did this come from? Why wasn't this set up in some of these earlier character scenes?
Yes. Yeah.
And I felt like most of the issue was, I don't want to say indulgent. I thought it was good character moments, whatever. But the pacing and the balance, it didn't quite work for me.
Yeah, I felt like Eve was putting a lot of stuff into this. But at the same time, in 20 pages, you maybe shouldn't have that much in here. Where you're going into the origin, you're having the plot, you're having building of the suit powers, you're having all kinds of weird background stuff that's happening that may or may not matter. I think she should have cut down on some of that stuff a little bit and focused more on the plot and maybe this little bit of a character piece at the end, and it would have read much better.
Well, if you think about it, we had a subplot going on of some sort with Xavier, another subplot with Riri and her mom, another subplot with the kids, arguably a subplot with the lab.
It's a lot of stuff.
And yeah, they're bouncing between almost too many things in a way that doesn't give any of them enough context or in a way that makes them feel like they're significant in matters other than just stuff's happening for her.
Yeah, so you felt like you got a lot of information. It just, the pacing was off a little bit, and she should have cut down on some things or maybe left them out or brought those up in other issues because it didn't give her enough for the stuff that maybe should have mattered in this issue.
Some way to find it have more cohesiveness and focus.
That would have made sense. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. So.
And it could have even been the same events if there had been a couple of either lines of dialogue or some captions, something where like when she's getting the kids home, it's like, what am I, these kids are just going to be out somewhere next time. This isn't a solution.
Something. Yeah.
And if set up earlier where she's like, I need a lab, but I could also use some lab assistance.
That would have made sense versus just like later that day, here's the lab. Oh, here's the kids. Yeah, that would have been better. Read better.
It felt a little nonsensical. I kind of get what they were going for. It just didn't quite pull it off.
That was it with me. Like some of the stuff didn't make sense to me. Like what she's doing when the kids, you know, the sweatshop and all that stuff that was going on, building of the new lab. That's what was throwing me when I first read this. I was like, I just don't see this as something realistically happening. But and also the way it happened, I was like, okay, that's kind of weird. But at the same time, I've been enjoying this title.
Exactly. It's not a bad title. I liked it. And I think while it was kind of accessible to new readers, I didn't think it was a good jumping on point because I didn't think it sold the series as well as it might.
Yes. This is probably out of the issues of this I've read. There's only been five. This was one of the weakest ones that we've read or I've read.
Yeah, I would agree.
The other ones have been better. And I still think this is a really good writer and I still think it's a really good title. It's just not a great issue to jump on because, you know, you'd be better off waiting, getting the trade and then picking up an issue 7. That'd probably be your best bet.
Or maybe the next issue, because this ends literally on end period, implying it's the end of like the first trade and the next issue starts something new.
That's true. Maybe this is the first trade, the 5.
Don't know.
I just automatically revert to 6 for the trade.
Yeah, I tend to do that too. I think if I hadn't read the first issue, you'd read it, you liked it, and you had finally talked me into reading and trying the title with this issue, I'd have been like, what's the big deal? I don't see what you like about the title.
Yes, and if I hadn't read it and we reviewed this, I probably would have just read it and not jumped on like I did with the Batgirl that I reviewed mid-cycle.
Yeah.
So wasn't the one, whereas the first one I was hooked, and the other ones were decent, really good reads. This one, ended, but I think it'll pick back up on the next issue, just because it's been a good title.
I would agree with that, and again, this is a title that I hadn't originally planned on getting, but I sampled the first issue, really enjoyed it, and kept going with it. So I think there's a lot to be said for every issue kind of needs to sell the series, and that's the failing of this issue.
I would agree, and I do still want to tell people who are listening, check it out, because it is a good read.
Yeah, it's a good title, and even though this is the weakest of the bunch, it still wasn't a bad issue. It just didn't reach the levels of previous ones, and I think there were things they could have done to easily improve this issue.
Yeah, and you get to see some new powers from Riri, which was kind of cool because, you know, she has that liquid metal thing that almost makes her like a Spider-Man type character.
They're doing some interesting stuff with the character, and I want to see this one succeed beyond just kind of here in Champions.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
So I went with a B- on this. I thought it was good. If you're going to check the title out and you haven't done it already, start either with the first issue or the first trade and get a little bit more of the story than just this.
We are totally in sync because I went with B- as well. This is a good series. This is not the best issue, but good series overall. Check it out.
Cool. Shall we go on to our other book?
Yes.
This is Star Trek Year 5, number 1 from IDW. Now, how much of an original series Trek stuff fan are you?
Okay, I used to watch it when I was young, and I remember stuff from it when I was young. And as I was reading this comic, the voices from the TV series, that's the voice I hear in my head. So I'm familiar with it, but I haven't seen the stuff in 30 years.
Did you enjoy the stuff when you watched it as a kid?
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed it. I used to love Star Trek. I watched all the movies. I watched the TV shows. And I watched The Next Generation and saw a tiny bit of the Deep Space one, and that was pretty much it. I never saw Voyager or anything like that.
Because I remember as a kid, flipping channels, hitting the reruns. Oh, it's, you know, Star Trek just wasn't for me at the time. And I'm a huge Star Trek fan now. So at some point, my opinion of it changed, and I'm not entirely sure if it was the movie or exactly what it was. Or maybe I just, you know, was too young when I first saw it. I definitely think they captured the voice, the likenesses. I really liked the use of kind of the tagline of, you know, Voyage is the Starship Enterprise, five-year mission, boldly go where no man has gone before, all that. It was cool to have that kind of in the story and whatnot, by Kirk, of course. I didn't really like the then flip the page. We started near, I guess, the end of the story on the first page, and then we're jumping to before for a two-page splash.
Yes.
I like the two-page splash. I like this. I think they should have just started with this.
It would have been better.
I think it's a major story crutch to start with the end of the story for that big, you know, oh, how do they get to here kind of a moment. It's like, you know, if your story's got, in your mind, such a weak ending or beginning, you've got to start with the ending, beef up the beginning.
Yeah, and that is kind of a cliche with a lot of TV series right now. You see that this is where they are, and then you have to watch the next 40 minutes to catch up to where you saw at the beginning.
I watched one TV show. Normally, that technique drives me just up the wall, but I watched one TV show that did it almost every episode.
Oh, that's annoying.
It worked on that show.
It did?
It was Flashpoint. They aired for at least a season on CBS. It's a Canadian show. Enrico Colantonio was one of the leads. Amy Jo Johnson was on it, and a couple other actors, almost all of which I believe are Canadian. But it was a tactical response unit, and it was like a SWAT team that would go in to de-escalate hostage or other sorts of situations like that. So they would start at the moment of, you know, gun to somebody's head kind of a thing, and they've got to talk them down. And then they literally roll back, and you see clips from the episode you're about to watch in kind of reverse order really fast to, okay, it's the start of their day. How do they get to that situation? How does it get up to that climatic moment, and how do they handle it?
Oh, so, but it was pretty cool watching that all play out.
Yeah, and that was one of the few cases where it was almost part of the formula of the show, but it was a consistently well-written show.
Okay.
And I think really represented those sorts of police officers in a very realistic and heroic, but not super heroic manner.
Okay, all right, cool,
so,
cool.
Quick plug for that show.
Yeah. Hey, by the way, you know how you got into Star Trek later?
Mm-hmm.
I used to love it when I was young, and later in life, I completely stopped watching it, and now I haven't seen any Star Trek in probably 20 years. So I'm the flip opposite of you.
I think it's a fantastic show, sometimes more so than others. I'm watching Discovery. It's not as Trek as I would like. When they're at their A game, they're doing some good social commentary in a sci-fi setting. and just tell some great stories.
Yeah, I would say my favorite Star Trek show right now is The Orville.
I haven't watched second season, but I really enjoyed the first because I thought they were more Star Trek than Discovery was.
Yeah, I've been loving it. The second season, I think you'll enjoy.
Yeah. I thought the art here was good. They captured the likenesses, yes. I think, brilliantly without it feeling kind of stiff and photo-referenced.
Yes.
When we get to that fourth page and Spock starts talking, my God, he was in full exposition mode.
Yes, he was.
Which is true for the character.
Yes.
And I was hearing the voices and the dialogue rang true to the characters.
Yeah, isn't that uncanny how I can be disengaged, or you maybe, I don't know, maybe not as disengaged for years, you know, decades, and yet those voices ring so true. We can still hear them, just the power that this show has had on people over the years.
Yeah, and it was clear that the creative team is very familiar with the series and whatnot, because there are a couple of lines here and there. I mean, even like, you know, the shirt Kirk is wearing at one point, is very much from the later series of Trek. They make some references to Scotty putting on some weight, Spock eventually maybe becoming a captain, and they were nice kind of nods to the movies and the TV show and kind of bridging that gap.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. And this was very cool. Now, I can't remember from the TV series, but did they only do the first 4 years and then it was gone? Did they not do the fifth year?
3 years.
3 years. Okay. That's what happened. Okay. All right. Gotcha. I just can't remember.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, it was, you know, not like we were old enough to be around to even watch it as kids. I mean.
Yeah. And so they basically finished the fourth and fifth year in comic form.
Pretty much. IDW has been doing quite a bit with Star Trek over the years, and I'm pretty sure they already did a year four at one point.
Okay.
That may have been 10 years ago, though. I forget. But there have been a lot of, between the novels, the comics, and other things, of kind of filling in some of those gaps.
Okay. Cool, cool.
I'm wondering if we're going to get, because the other thing that was kind of the fourth year was the animated series.
Okay. Okay. I gotcha. Now, one thing I really liked in this story, I liked how much they got into basically the science and tech of some of the stuff that they're doing with this star that's basically going supernova, you know, on the verge of, you know, having gamma radiation spread out everywhere and wipe out a sector. So I really like that. These people are very technical in their writing.
Yeah, they've got a way to get in the science without it feeling like just blatant technobabble or whatever.
Exactly.
So they're again, by and large, IDW gets the right kind of people to write these things and draw them. They have a love and affinity for the material and an understanding of what it is kind of at its core. If they've got the right people saying the right kind of things in the scenes, that it just plays really well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would agree.
I am curious if we're going to see any of the characters that were exclusive pretty much to the animated series, since this takes place pretty much right after it.
Okay.
There was a cat creature in place of Uhura, I think, at one point, and a three-armed guy in place of Chekhov.
Okay, I never saw the animated series, so I'm not familiar with them at all.
Yeah, it'd just be nice callbacks or whatever.
Yeah, but later on, you basically have a new alien race kind of that we see.
I don't think it's new. I think it's the Tholians that were part of the original series.
Oh, okay. I just can't remember, but you basically get to see these characters then.
I don't know that we ever actually saw the characters before, but the Tholians were the ones that had, like, the Tholian Web was the name of the episode. It might even have been a two-parter, where they created, like, an energy cage that trapped the Enterprise.
Okay. All right. Cool, cool. So now we actually see the Tholians, and we get to see some stuff transpire.
Yeah. So I think they're expanding again on the established universe, which I think is great stuff.
Yes.
I mean, this was a good issue. It read like the opening of an episode of the original series. Obviously, there wasn't enough room to do like a full episode kind of length story. But I enjoyed what they were doing here.
I really did, too. Now, I did have a question for you. You may or may not know. But when they're on planet, the away team, you know, doing their thing, and then there's a ship that kind of shows up at one point. Do you know who or what those are based on the design of the ship?
No, I don't.
Okay, me neither. I was just like, I don't know who those are, but it looked kind of interesting. I really want to see what plays out here.
If this ship has shown up before, it again would have been in the original series, and it's been a while since I've watched it. I have rewatched all of them.
Yeah, but that looks like a little too high tech for what they were doing on TV back in the 60s and stuff.
Yeah, design-wise, it feels, frankly, 80s or later, to be honest, just from the look of it.
Yeah, so something newer that they're kind of running with, you know, maybe a new thing that we will see in the next issue.
Yeah. One of the things they've done that I thought was a lot of fun with the comics is some stuff that they just can't do on the TV shows or whatever. The current Q conflict where they're crossing over the different crews.
Yeah.
In the Kelvin timeline-based series, the movie continuity and stuff, they actually had a crossover with this version of Kirk and crew, which was fun. So if you're into Star Trek, IDW's been doing a good job with the license, and I think this is just a continuation of that.
Yeah, and there were also two things I really liked in this. Well, one thing I really liked and one thing I found very funny. One was Kirk, you know, the character moments with him, how, you know, when these guys have been together for 5 years, this crew, and what's maybe coming next and the conflict that comes along with that. Mm-hmm. You know, the breaking up of the team, you know, or what's going to happen with the team now that the five-year mission is over. So I liked that whole scene and how they talked about it and the conflict along with congratulations. That was really cool. And then the other thing was, you never want to be the guy in red in Star Trek. Those people always die.
Certainly in the original series, they are the expendables.
Yeah, it's like the nobodies in red. They're always the ones that die every time.
That was, I think, why they shifted the color from gold to red between the original series and Next Generation.
Oh, okay. All right.
because gold was the command color, and red was science, security, and frankly, the expendables. Whereas in Next Gen, that was the command color, because that's what Riker and Picard are wearing.
Yep.
Gold went to science, and I believe... Well, here in the original series, blue was science and medical and stuff. I'm trying to remember.
Red was the, I thought security, but I don't
yeah,
know.
Security and engineering, because isn't yeah. Scotty wearing?
Yeah, he is. Yeah.
I really want somebody to do a storyline set in that interim period where they're shifting the colors.
Yeah, what's going on and why?
Even if it's just a short story with a couple of people on a you know, lower class ship or whatever, if just complaining, it's like, but I just finally gotten used to the color scheme, and why is this changing? You know, somebody gets, you know, busted down because they'd referred to a captain and, you know, the wrong way because they hadn't realized it was now gold instead of red, and he'd confused who's the security officer, who's the captain, you know, something like that.
That would be good to explain why in the heck they changed it.
I could see where somebody just didn't catch the memo in time and got in trouble.
Yeah, but I always found that funny. I remember in Star Trek, always the guys with the red shirts, you know something's going to happen.
Yeah, it was just about cliche. Well, not just about, it was cliche.
Yeah, but it's funny too because they used it and I was like, yeah, it brought you back.
Mm-hmm. There's a classicness to this era of Trek that I think is a lot of fun and I think they capture really well. So if you liked the original show, like I said, definitely check this out. I'm going with a B+ on this. I think it's worth your time.
Yeah. And actually, with me, I said, if it was me personally, you know, I don't have the biggest Star Trek background, and I have seen a lot of the shows. I saw all the movies. It would be like in the B level. But I think if you're a super fan of this stuff, if you are a real Star Trek fan, you owe yourself to read this because I think it was written really well. And I think for the Trek fan, it should be A-.
I can see that. So which are you actually going with?
I'm going with the A-, assuming I would be a Trek fan.
Okay.
Picking this up. So I because I thought it was written really well, and for someone who's not hardcore into it, they got me into it, and they made me want to read more of it.
Fair enough. Sounds good.
So I give him an attaboy. So you still haven't watched the second season of Orville, correct?
Correct.
All right, you have to watch it because it's really good. And instead of doing the done-in-one plots, they've gone to some more expanded plots and bigger threats a la Star Trek, while at the same time keeping it somewhat light and fun, which is interesting.
Cool. It's definitely on the list. It's one of the ones we may get to next-ish. It's just a matter of, do we catch up on the Marvel Cinematic movies, of which we're a few behind, and we haven't had as much time to watch TV or movies lately.
Yeah, well, hey, I can understand that. Now, I'm still baffled. I mean, I know the reason, but I think CBS would have been better served, you know, releasing Star Trek to regular TV. You know, they did the all access thing, and I guess they want to get a boost, and maybe that's a property that they think they could get a boost with. People are into tech or into streaming services. I don't know, but I just, you know, that barrier to access, I'm not paying for it, so I never see those episodes. It's kind of disappointing to me.
I think they intentionally put it on CBS All Access as a way to kind of jumpstart that property or that service. I don't think that was a horrible idea. I'm not saying it was a great idea. It's probably doing better there than maybe it would have on TV. I think that's more of a question Sam could answer. And when we talk about the ratings next time, I'll try to remember to bring that up.
Yeah.
But if I were them when I was going and launching CBS All Access, I would have not only done that series, I would have had maybe two others to go with it, one of which I definitely would have done some kind of a revival of Mission Impossible.
That would have been cool. That would have been really cool. Or, you know, even another, what is that real popular show they have on there with all the science nerds? I'm trying to think of.
MacGyver? Big Bang?
Is that CBS? No, I guess their biggest thing is I can't remember, but I think it's the Big Bang Theory. Isn't that a big CBS property?
I'm trying to remember which channel it's on. It's been a while since I've watched.
I'm pretty sure it is. But they did the spinoff for like Young Sheldon with that. Yeah. I think they should, because that's their biggest property. They could have done another spinoff or another type of spinoff of that series into the All Access thing if they really wanted to goose the ratings. You might get a lot of people interested in that.
I think having more than one show is kind of new material, and they've got a few others. But none that really have hit my radar. And I think if they'd gone with a few other kind of iconic properties, they really could have given it a bit more of a boost than just the Star Trek fans.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking too. Because if I'm a smart Star Trek fan, I wait. I spend 1 month on CBS All Access. I, you know, blaze through all the episodes, cancel it. Next season comes out, wait till they're all out. Pay for 1 month, and that's not a, you know, a way to win when you're running a streaming service.
No, but it's a way to win if you subscribe to a streaming service.
True.
I do think there's going to be a shakeout of streaming services in the next few years. There's just so many, and a few more coming.
Yeah, there has to be something happens because they can't all be there, and they're burning through cash right now. The only one really making money is Netflix.
And Netflix, I think, is in a great position just because they've been around for so long and they've got such a great library. I think with each of the studios starting to try to make their own, CBS is at least viable because they've got a fairly deep library of stuff on it. But it's not enough that I could say, oh, yeah, you definitely got to go sign up. Other ones, like when MGM started Stargate Command and they kind of launched it with a 2-hour prequel movie to the whole thing that was syndicated in 10-minute slices or whatever. It's like, yeah, it doesn't quite work. It's not enough. And I don't know if they've ever added any additional content to it.
Oh, yeah. And I don't think these other services can compete with just old content because Netflix has, for years, they bought all the old material from those companies and streamed it for cheap, and they gave it to them for cheap. And now they've created all their own content. And now they have 150 million subscribers, and they're making over $2 billion a month, and it's tough to compete with that.
Well, I think the problem of trying to do it on old content is a lot of us already have that on DVD.
Yeah, it's like, that's what you watch when there's nothing new to watch.
I mean, for the Stargate Command stuff, I've got all of Stargate SG-1, Stargate Universe, and Stargate Atlantis on DVD.
So why stream it? Yeah.
Exactly.
No point. Yeah. Hey, so how have you been doing with your reading?
I am actually read everything for this week. So
cool.
It is the first time in about a year that I've been current 2 weeks in a row.
Congratulations.
So I'm very pleased with that. I see no reason to think that won't continue to next week. Granted, I'm not necessarily including the free comic book day stuff as part of the regular influx. Historically, I haven't done that just because, you know, getting 50 books and then another, you know, 20 or whatever was just too much. It was crazy.
Yeah.
This time around, I'm getting obviously a lot less, both just in general and in terms of the free comic book day stuff.
Okay, cool.
So, but yeah, I'm keeping current, which is nice. Read the first issue of Achilles Inc. from Source Point Press. That was a lot of fun. That was done by Andy Schmidt, who does Comics Experience, which is a great way to learn how to do comics if you're interested in that kind of stuff.
Very cool. So are you looking at doing your comic pretty soon or anytime in the near future?
Not necessarily the near future, but at some point.
All right. You're preparing yourself right now.
Years and years of prep, reading comics and stuff. I do still have this huge stack of books that I want to start getting to at some point if I can figure out a game plan for how to kind of properly consume that and learn what I would like to out of them.
Yeah. And by the way, we are actually recording this on Free Comic Book Day. It's a Saturday we're recording this week. So I hope everyone had a wonderful Free Comic Book Day. And like Jason said, take some pictures if you actually go to some local shops. Show us what you guys saw.
Absolutely. Today, Free Comic Book Day is a great time to go check out the local stores, see what they've got to offer. Many of them take advantage of it as both kind of an open house, putting their best foot forward for the community, and having sales and such. So it's a great opportunity. And even if you didn't make it out for Free Comic Book Day, go support your local retailers.
Definitely, yeah.
I mean, I shop with Cowabunga, which is literally 1,200 miles away if I were to drive. But I try to, when I can, support the local ones. Probably not as well as I could and should, but it's just a time issue also.
Yeah, it makes sense. And big shout out to Eric. Thank you so much. He's sped up his shipping even more than the fast shipping he already had. So my books are coming earlier and earlier. Love that.
Yeah, I already got my next shipment.
Yeah, which is just insane. Insanely fast, so we're very happy. Thank you so much, sir.
It's a great service and very happy with that.
Hey, and have you listened to the clips I sent in for the preview spotlight already? I sent them in yesterday.
Yes, I have.
Okay, I sent in one for you particularly, which I think you will like.
You did, and I was already going to do that item. Matter of fact, just before recording this morning, not only did I listen to your clips, I recorded my clip on that same item. Just in case people were wondering, well, what item are they talking about? There's an omnibus of the official Handbook of the Marvel Universe.
Yes.
And I did discuss if I am going to get that omnibus or not.
Ah, because I know you have all the official handbooks of the Marvel Universe, and you love that stuff. You love the reference.
At the risk of being redundant with my clip, which I'm almost about to be, I'm going to go ahead and tell you a little bit about that.
Spoiler, all right.
Yeah. When the official Handbook of the Marvel Universe first came out, Mark Grumold, who I think was just an amazing geek, he was one of us, died way too young. He was the editor of it. Any character that had shown up like three or more times, they included him. It was the be-all, end-all reference. And I was at just the right age. It's like, I want that. I got not only a copy of everyone, I got two copies. One to put safely away in the collection and another for reference. Well, at some point, they came out with trades. Now, this was before trades were ubiquitous and stuff. And these were not, I'm going to say, like uber fancy trades. It was just, here's a collection. It's in a trade. You know, I've got all of those sitting here on my bookcase. Some other point, they came out with hardcovers. These are a little nicer. I've got all of those. Some point, they came out with the Essential Handbook of the Marvel Universe, black and white version. I've got all of those, not only the original series, but because they had the original series, they had the deluxe series, which is kind of a redo it, an update of it, and then they had the master version, master edition or whatever. I got all of those. So I've got, I think, two copies of all of those, plus the trades, the hardcovers, the essentials, and now coming up, the omnibus.
So you're going in?
I'm going in, and I think we need a new term for this. This is beyond double dipping.
Yeah, it's beyond triple. It's beyond quadruple. You're in the quintuple. I don't know what it is.
I think I'm up to about six now.
Six. I don't know the word for that.
Neither do I. I think that's the challenge for the listeners is what would the term for that be?
Yeah, but it was so funny. I was flipping through the book, and I saw that, and I was like, John Mayo, this is his book.
Yeah, I love that kind of stuff. And part of it is not just because I want to have that reference, but there's a growing part of me, and again, I mentioned this in the clip, I want Marvel to have that reference.
Yeah, yeah. Remember where everything, the way it happened, and what their powers are, what they do, who they are, things like that.
Maybe even know who the personalities are, because there are a couple of times, it's like, this writer has clearly never ever read the Avengers, yet he's writing them.
Yes, that happens from time to time.
Drives me nuts.
Yeah, so anyways, when I sent in the clips, I was wondering if you listened to it already. It's like, there's one in there for you.
Yep. No, I appreciate that.
Hey, no problem.
So it's good stuff. It's, again, one of many things I think people should check out. I'll be honest, this time with the preview spotlight, I was a little worried a couple of days ago. It's like, geez, am I going to have an eclipse? Because I think as of maybe Wednesday, Drew had sent in a clip for Comics for Fun and Profit with his brother. A clip. And I think at that point, that's all I had.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, I'm pretty sure I sent the emails out correctly. I'm pretty sure people got them. Maybe people are just busy. But it took, I'm trying to think, when did I get the next set, because Todd sent a couple in, and then Billy sent quite a few in. But it took a little bit before I started getting all the clips. I think most of the stuff was either Thursday night, because I listened to the clips from Drew and Kyle, Todd, Billy, and Jason on my drive into work yesterday. And it was funny, they timed out exactly towards the length of my drive. I was finishing those right as I was pulling into the office.
It's funny.
It was convenient. But then Brawlinator sent his stuff in, you sent your stuff in, Jason Carpenter sent his stuff in, Mike Myers sent his stuff in, Mo sent his stuff in, Nick sent his stuff in, all within like the last 24 hours.
Wow. So you're going to be busy this weekend.
Yeah. But it's good. And I think the episode will shape up to be probably over 2 hours again, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, usually I send mine in pretty early, but this week was like insanely busy. And at last week, too, I was just crazy busy at work.
Oh, yeah, same here. Same here. I've just been swamped, which is why I didn't realize until just a day or two ago, wait, I haven't really gotten much. I've not even started to put together my order as to what I'm going to get this week. I obviously looked enough through the previews to pick my picks, but that's one of the other things I'll probably be spending today working on.
Yeah, I think usually I send out like a notice like a week ahead of time, the weekend before, hey, preview spotlight time on the Slack channel. And this time I didn't even get around to that till Wednesday.
Yeah, but thank you for doing that. I'm doing good to send the emails out and get my side in line. So I appreciate you doing that. Brawlinator putting up the links for all the online solicits.
Definitely. Thanks, Brawlinator.
The other thing to point out, and Billy had asked about this because I think his catalog hadn't come yet. He was wondering where to get the page numbers and such. If you go to previewsworld.com, they've got a section for catalog, and that's where they've got the latest previews. On that page, over on the right side, there's the consumer order form, and there's a TXT link for the text file, and it's got all the page numbers and everything in the consumer order form.
Yeah. And also, if you guys send out a message on the Slack channel, like someone, I think it was Dr. Mose, put a note, hey, I haven't received my previews yet, and Eric will send you out a free digital code to download it, the digital version of the catalog, or we all get digital codes in our copies. I can give someone a digital code if they need one.
Yeah, if not having previews is slowing you down from sending in clips, please speak up, let us know. There are multiple ways we can help you out, either by doing that, by pointing you to where the online solicits are, to pointing you to where all the stuff is in the Previews World website, or there are a couple other ways we can help you out.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a team activity. We all work toward the same goal.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Speaking of which, we've got the teleconference coming up next Saturday as we record this and as they listen to this a couple of days from now. It'll be 7 p.m. on Saturday, May 11th, 7 p.m. Central Time. So do your own time zone adjustments if you're not in Central Time, which I'm sure many of you are not. We'll talk about whatever we talk about. Fair warning, I am still way behind on the Marvel movies, so probably not going to discuss Endgame while I'm on there. I appreciate the lack of spoilers thus far and the continued lack of spoilers on the Slack channel, just because, again, I haven't seen Captain Marvel, which is the movie before it. I haven't seen Ant-Man and Wasp, which is the movie before that. Those are on the list to do, but I'll be honest, a 3-hour runtime plus whatever previews they put in front of Avengers Endgame, I don't know that I'm going to see that one in the theater.
Yeah, I hate having to get up and use the bathroom and then missing and coming back. What did I miss? What did I miss?
Yeah, it's just that's a longer movie than my bladder capacity tends to be.
Me too.
But I am looking forward to it. I was thankful I was able to get to Infinity War without spoilers. I think I can do that again this time. But again, need the help on that.
Definitely.
So it's respectful to the fans, the creators, people behind the stuff and things like that to let people enjoy the movie as it plays out.
I agree wholeheartedly.
So the next preview spotlight, number 140 for the, I guess, the June previews, that will be due Saturday morning. Let's see. I think that'll be June 8th.
Yep, June 8th.
If whenever I give out a date, I'm like off and I give like a Friday or a Monday or Sunday or something like that. Unless I explicitly say it's not a Saturday, it's always the Saturday, the second Saturday after previews is released. Sometimes when I'm looking at my calendar, it's just the small print, the bad eyes. It just doesn't always work out. Again, regular format, one clip per pick. And again, if you need help finding a copy of previews or something or the information and stuff, let us know. We can help you out. it's great having so many people send stuff in, because sometimes that adds stuff to what I get.
Yeah, it's true.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it for me.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss DC's Year of the Villain number 1 from DC, Uncanny X-Men number 17 from Marvel, and Uncle Scrooge number 44 from IDW. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.